Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. It is 3:32 p.m. here on Wednesday, May 3rd. We are in the Belts Committee Room here in the state capital of Juneau. Just a reminder to folks to please mute their cell phones. Joining me today is Senator Keel, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Bjorkman. We are expecting President Stevens and myself, Senator Tobin. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Thanks to the lovely Sydney and Mary Gwen for holding down today's moderating and recording duties. On the agenda today, we have the consideration of Governor Dunleavy's appointment to the Board of Regents, the student representative. We also will be having our first hearing of Senate Bill 136, Teacher Certificates Preparation Programs. Before that hearing, we will be taking action on Senate Bill 132, Employment Tax for Education Facilities, sponsored by Senator Bishop, and we also will have our second hearing for Senate Bill 120, extending education tax credits. For those who would like to follow along, all the documents for today's meeting are on that table right there by the door, and they're also available on BASIS. We will be taking public testimony on Senate Bill 136, Teacher Certificates and Preparation Program, and on the confirmation of, I'm going to try to say this name correctly, and I apologize to folks. Oh, goodness. How do I say this name? Albiona Salimi, the student representative for the Board of Regents for the University of Alaska. To call in to provide public testimony, if you are in Anchorage, please call 907-563-9085. In Juneau, please call 907-586-9085. All of the locales, you are able to call 1-844-586-9085. That is a toll-free number, or you can email us at senate.education@akleg.gov. And I would be remiss to mention you can also go to your legislative information office to provide public testimony. Brief at ease. Back on the record here in Senate Education, I do want to correct the record. We will not be taking public testimony on Senate Bill 136 at this time. That is Senate Bill 136, Teacher Certificates and Preparation Program. We will be taking public testimony on the confirmation, which we will now move on to today. In your packets, you should have the resume and information from the governor's appointee of Albiona Salimi. Ms. Salimi, I believe you are online. If you would like to take yourself off mute and please put yourself on record and provide your opening comments.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Albiona Salimi. I am currently entering my junior year at the University of Alaska Anchorage, where I'm majoring in political science and minoring in justice as well as women's studies. Having served in student government at UAA for nearly 2 years now, I know how important students are to the success of the university, as well as the economic future of the state of Alaska. And more importantly, as a first generation student in my family, I know how important the university is to me and to other students like me. So honestly, I'm really humbled and honored to be considered to serve as the student regent for the University of Alaska. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today with you guys and to speak about my passion for student leadership and the university. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions for Ms. Salimi? Seeing no questions, any closing comments you'd like to make?
Well, just to say thank you again, and I'm very excited to potentially be serving in this position.
Thank you so much. Seeing no additional comments or questions from committee members, I'll now open public testimony. Would anyone here in the room wish to provide public testimony on this candidate? Seeing no one here in the room, I'm looking online, and I see that we have no one online. I will now close public testimony. And I will look to the committee, and Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Senate Education Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointee to the University of Alaska Board of Regents and recommends Albiona Salimi's name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect the intent of any of the members of the Senate Education Committee to vote for or against the individual during any further sessions for the purpose of confirmation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Thank you again, Ms. Salimi. We're going to take a brief at ease to sign the documents. And we're back on the record here in Senate Education. It is May 3rd at 3:38 p.m. And we have before us staff to Senator Bishop, Mr. Grusendorf. If you'd like to provide a really quick overview for us and just make sure we know what we're talking about today.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. For the record, my name is Cody Grusendorf. I'm staff to Senator Bishop. Senate Bill 132 would impose a $30 head tax on employed individuals in Alaska, self-employed individuals as well. And the intent of the funds would be to go towards the school major maintenance and construction funds to help rehabilitate our schools. Pretty significant deferred maintenance backlog there. So we're trying to raise some revenue to help address that.
Thank you so much. Any further questions from the committee? Senator Keel.
Madam Chair, just to comment, I know my staff has spoken with the sponsor's staff. My confusion in the previous hearing about different treatment for people with waged work and self-employed work was just that. The bill treats them equally.
Thank you, Senator Keel, for that clarification. If there is no objection, it is my intent to move Senate Bill 132 out of committee today. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to report Senate Bill 132, Work Order 33-LS0764-B from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there objection? Seeing no objection, Senate Bill 132, Work Order 33-LS0764-B is reported from Senate Education Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We will now take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. And we're back on the record here in Senate Education. It is May 3rd here in the Belts Committee Room. It's 3:41 p.m. And we're moving right along to our next item of business, which is the first hearing for Senate Bill 136, sponsored by Senator Olson. It is regarding teacher certificates and preparation programs. And Senator Olson is here with us to introduce the bill. I believe his staffer, Ms. Alcantara, is also here to provide a sectional analysis. So as you know the drill, when you are ready, please put your name and title on record and begin your presentation.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chair Tobin and distinguished members of the Education Committee. Thank you very much for hearing Senate Bill 136 today. For the record, I'm Donald Olson, the Senator from District T. Today I'm joined by my staff, Almaria Alcantara, who will provide a general overview of the bill. But before I hand it off, I'd like to share a few issues related to the bill. As you know, there's a shortage of teachers throughout the state of Alaska and in other states as well. And since these are affecting our schools, our communities, and our children, we're looking for ways to address this issue. The Department of Education and Early Development 2021 Action Plan made several recruitment suggestions. Working off one of these recommendations, this bill allows for an alternative certification program for qualified individuals looking to teach in our state. And now I'll hand it off to Ms. Alcantara to go ahead and share some of the specifics of the bill.
Thank you, Chairman Tobin and committee members, for hearing Senate Bill 136 today. For the record, Almaria Alcantara, staff to Senator Olson. And if it pleases the chair, I can go ahead and continue with the sectional.
Please do.
but I would like to specify before beginning, this is the sectional for Senate Bill 136, version S. Section 1 amends Alaska statute to specify an individual must receive a baccalaureate degree from an institution of higher education accredited nationally or by a recognized regional accrediting association. Section 2 amends Alaska statute to ensure the regulations must allow the board to issue a teacher's certificate to a person who has successfully completed a teacher's preparation program approved under M of this bill, which is new language. Section 3 adds new language that directs the board to establish standards for the approval of teacher preparation programs and specifies that the standards must be comparable to teacher prep programs through national organizations recognized by the Council for Higher Education Accreditation or an organization approved by the commissioner, and that the board approves a teacher preparation program offered by the organization that has operated for at least 5 years and operates in at least 5 different states. Section 4 amends the eligibility of a subject matter expert limited teacher certificate. A person shall be currently enrolled in an approved post-baccalaureate teacher program at a nationally or regionally accredited institute or a teacher preparation program approved under this legislation. And Section 5 sets the effective date of July 1st, 2023.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing no questions, anything prior to us bringing in your invited testifiers that you'd like to touch upon?
Yeah, if I may. I would just like to note that really this legislation comes from the 2021 Action Plan for Teacher Retention and Recruitment that was prepared for the Department of Education and Early Development. And in one of those recommendations, I believe it's on page 8, it's listed under 5, is creating or looking for alternate certificate pathways. So kind of using that in light of the legislation to kind of set those standards for DEED and for the programs that would be seeking approval from the department.
Thank you. I'm looking around to see if we have any additional questions. I do have one. I am curious to know, when we talk about nationally recognized programs, are those all for-profit or nonprofits, or are there a mixture? What types of programs are we talking about?
Yeah, if I could, I'd like to defer that question to Deed and then also Ms. Melanie Olmsted online.
Perfect. Well, we will definitely ask that question when the invited testifier comes up. Any additional questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. We're moving now on to invited testifiers. We have Ms. Melanie Olmsted, the executive director of the American Board for Certification of Teacher Excellence. Ms. Olmsted, if you can hear us, could you please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony when you are ready?
Thank you. I can hear you. As noted, I am Melanie Olmsted, the Executive Director of American Board for Certification of Teacher Excellence. We go by American Board for short. I want to thank you all for allowing me to speak with you here today in support of SB 136. I want to provide you with a little bit of information about American Board, who we are, what we do, and how SB 136 relates to American Board. The organization was actually founded by the United States Department of Education in 2001 under President George W. Bush for two reasons. The first was that data was already showing at the national level that there would be a teacher shortage as the population continued to grow, and we knew that the baby boomer generation was going to retire. We could see that there was going to be a need for more teachers. The second reason for the creation of American Board is that, independent of a teacher shortage, students benefit from having access to teachers who have had real-world subject matter experience, and that's how American Board is able to serve local schools. Currently, American Board operates in 14 other states across the country. Some of the states where we have been able to be the most successful include Idaho, Wisconsin, Missouri. In Idaho, as an example, we've got just about 4,000 teachers across the state, and that's a number we're really proud of. We've been in the state for over a decade now, and the data point that I'd want to share with you, in addition to the 4,000 teachers in Idaho, is the fact that from a third-party study, those teachers have a 97% retention rate at the critical 3-year mark. And that's a piece we're really proud of. The national average for teachers at 3 years is only about 80%. So the 97 really speaks to the talent and commitment that American Board trained teachers have. I do know that this bill is not specific to American Board. My interpretation of the bill now is that there are a few other organizations that would qualify for the application process. Obviously, whether or not they get approved would be completely up to Alaska, but I do know of other organizations that meet those year and state benchmarks. Every year we do look to see if there are states that we could serve, and given the teacher retention and recruitment action plan that came out in Alaska in 2021, we do feel that Alaska is a state that we would be able to serve by quickly and affordably getting certified teachers in your local schools. In particular, the schools that we're best able to serve tend to be very rural, because we know that they have the hardest time recruiting new teachers from local universities or from state universities. And because American Board focuses on training local people to become teachers, they're able to serve rural schools by kind of eliminating that recruitment process. The average American Board teacher is about 40 years old. As the bill notes, they all have a bachelor's degree at a minimum, but we often find that they are subject matter experts with master's degrees and PhDs, particularly in the STEM fields. And that's everything. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them. But again, I really want to thank you for your time today and allowing me to speak on behalf of this bill.
Thank you very much, Ms. Olmstead. Are there any questions for this testifier? Seeing none, I do have a question. As last year, we had a piece of legislation passed this body, passed the legislature, the Alaska Reads Act. And in that legislation, we have a requirement for new educators to receive at least 6 credit hours in culturally responsive education, hoping that they will understand how it is to provide a quality education to the diversity and complexity of Alaska students. Do you offer such training, and how would you make your training Alaska-specific or Alaska-informed?
Thank you for that question. I am familiar with the legislation that you were speaking about. We do not offer that training, but I will note that it is not a unique situation that states have state-specific training on their record. As an example, North Dakota requires that every new teacher take a suicide prevention course. And so instead of offering that course ourselves, we just make it clear to our candidates that it is a requirement for licensure. And so therefore, in Alaska, if American Board were to be an approved program to operate in the state, anyone who goes through our program would still need to meet that state requirement. American Board would not provide that training, but we would make sure that they know that they have to get it from an approved university.
Thank you for that. Additional questions from committee members? Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you for joining us with your testimony and presentation today, ma'am. As someone who might be looking to become a teacher engages with your organization, what kind of timeline can they expect in order to achieve licensure?
Thank you for your question. That is definitely a good question. We say on average 7-8 months, but I'd like to provide a little bit more detail there. It really depends on what the new teacher candidate has been doing prior to our program. As an example, a lot of people who use our program are currently long-term substitute teachers. They are in classrooms right now on an emergency certificate. They have been paraprofessionals for a decade. These people are able to move through the program incredibly quickly because the pedagogy, you know, the art and science teaching where we cover classroom management, instructional design, teacher leadership, those are content areas that they are very comfortable with. So they are able to progress through the program very quickly and demonstrate their competency in a very timely manner. On the flip side, someone who has been a pharmacist may be very comfortable with their chemistry certificate content area, but they might need to spend more time studying the pedagogy. So it really varies per person, but we can see it happening in a few months for those people who are already actively working in schools up to a year.
So your organization, follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Bjorkman.
Your organization is comfortable certifying teachers that simply have experience as a substitute in exchange for what would be a year or more of university-level training?
Thank you for your question. It's not that we certify them just because they have been substitute teachers. They would still have to progress through the entirety of the course, demonstrating their proficiency in pedagogy and their proficiency in the subject areas that they choose to teach. So it depends on how quickly they are able to move through that. But ultimately, no one earns a certificate through American Board until they have been able to prove their proficiency through their certification exam.
Follow-up, Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what methods do you use to assess that proficiency?
Thank you for your question. American Board has our own proprietary exam in every subject area that we offer, which is elementary education, special education, U.S. and world history, mathematics, biology, chemistry, and physics and general science. So we have proprietary exams specific to each of those subject areas. We also have a proprietary exam specific to pedagogy. Third parties have compared those exams to the nationally known Praxis exams and have found them to be equal to and sometimes more rigorous than the Praxis. So that's the benchmark we use for demonstrating proficiency.
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So for the public and folks in the room and maybe yourself, ma'am, the Praxis exams are content level exams that test a teacher's knowledge in the subject area. They do not at all test pedagogy or someone's ability to manage a classroom. How are you assessing the candidate's ability to practice the trade of teaching?
Thank you for your question. The Praxis actually does offer the Praxis Core, which is a pedagogy exam. Similarly, American Board offers the PPK, which is the Professional Teaching Knowledge Pedagogy Exam. And these exams are developed in a way that they force candidates to be familiar with and comfortable with best practices. So it's not just a matter of, do you know how to design a lesson plan, but testing candidates on whether or not they know how to administer a pop quiz in their classroom, take the results of that quiz, and change their instruction to better serve their students. That's all able to be assessed through appropriately designed pedagogy exams.
Ms. Olmsted, just for the folks here in the room, you might want to explain what pedagogy is. I'm not sure everyone knows this word.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for allowing me to clarify. So pedagogy is what is loosely known as the art and science of teaching. But what that typically refers to is the major buckets of instruction. So classroom management, effective instructional design, effective instructional delivery, assessment, and teacher leadership. So not just do you know math, but do you know how to actively teach math? That's what pedagogy is.
Thank you. And just for folks' awareness, we do have Kelly Manning, the Deputy Director of Innovation and Education Excellence for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, and Sandra Medrith, the Program Administrator for Teacher Certification, here in the room with us as well to provide any assist on questions, which I do have a few if you are available to answer those. However, any additional questions, Senator Bjorkman, of this invited testifier? Thank you, sir. If you both would love to come up, I have a few questions myself. I'm going to ask that for each time you speak, if you could identify yourself for the record so we can make sure Mary Gwen gets the right who said what written down. If you could please identify yourselves for the record, and then we'll also have the opportunity to go over fiscal notes.
Good afternoon. My name is Kelly Manning. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence for the Department of Education.
And for the record, my name is Sandra Meredith. I administer teacher certification in the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence.
Thank you both very much. My first question really is a broad one, which is, can you explain the difference between national and regional certification as they are described here in the legislation?
Chair Tobin, this is Sandra Meredith again for the record. National accreditation is typically accreditation that is focused on private universities, often universities that are focused on particular religious or kind of specialized areas. I'll make sure I said that right. National. Regional accreditation is typically the accreditation used by public institutions across the nation.
Thank you. And so for my question regarding, may a nationally accredited program be a for-profit institution? Is that an ability that a national accredited university or school or program might entertain?
Chair Tobin, I am not positive on that question. I would have to bring that answer back to you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any additional questions before I ask my follow-up? Seeing none, I am curious, particularly in how someone might become certified as an educator today here in the state of Alaska. So if, outside of this legislation, what is the process that someone goes through to become a certified educator, or the typical process?
Chair Tobin, again, this is Sandra Meredith for the record. So there's a number of different approaches. So if we start with an individual exiting high school, typically they're going to enroll in a bachelor's degree program. They some of those programs will also have the teacher preparation part of it embedded. Elementary ed is typically what you see there. Some of those individuals may get a degree in science or social studies or English, and then go on to complete a master's degree or a post-bac program in the art of teaching. Those programs in the traditional fashion include a student teaching component, and where they're working with a mentor, teacher mentor or coach, through, and it, you know, that's kind of the standard approach that many folks go through. Other approaches that are available in our state include one that's actually a statutory allowance that's allows an individual with a master's or a bachelor's degree that has not yet completed the teacher preparation part of a program to actually start teaching in our state after taking a test in basic competency and content area, where they're working towards completing the teacher preparation program while they're also working in a classroom as teacher of record. Those programs that they engage in are with a university, or we don't have any other alternative ones outside of that approach at this point in Alaska.
Thank you for that. Any additional questions from committee members, or I might just keep asking mine? I am curious about the length of time it normally takes. Say someone's graduated high school and to the point they become an educator. What is the normal, typical length of time?
Through the chair, again, this is Sandra Meredith. For somebody who is on track, as university would want them to be on track, a four-year bachelor's degree is definitely a possibility. For an individual already having a degree, they can actually complete the MAT program here at UAS in a year, and that is very intensive, where they're working not only with the coursework, but they're also in the classroom student teaching with an experienced educator.
I appreciate that. And my last question is, we had a really excellent presentation from the department regarding the Teacher Retention Working Group, some of the recommendations, and I remember one slide talking about how not all teacher preparation programs are the same, that we see retention rates, particular programs are higher than others. Where would nationally certified or nationally accredited programs potentially fall within that mix when we see the basis between locally grown or grow your own programs versus some of the preparation programs that we've seen fast-tracked outside of the state and those folks coming in? Where would this might fit, if just in your estimation?
Through the chair again, Sandra Meredith for the record. The study that was quoted, I believe, by Amy Binlove in that presentation showed that folks that were prepared by the more non-traditional approaches, that where they're not actually getting that intensive time with a practicing teacher through a student teaching or residency model, that broadly those individuals tend to leave the profession more rapidly than those individuals that have that rich experience. But again, I think that varies from individual to individual, but grossly, I think that is the trend.
Thank you. With no other questions I see before the committee, if folks are okay with going to the fiscal notes, let's move on to the fiscal notes.
For the record, Chair Tobin, this is Kelly Manning, the Deputy Director. And so we have provided a fiscal note that has two key components. There are some one-time costs for standing up the program and then some ongoing costs that we have noted. Because the bill would require the State Board of Education and the Department of Education to evaluate programs against a set of standards. Because we don't have state standards for Alaska, we would work from the national standards to create a state standard for the state of Alaska. And so the fiscal note, it contains one-time expenses to convene the work groups and a facilitator to guide that process that has that experience with national standards and creating these types of standards for other states or other similar types of programs. And so those one-time expenses are related to the cost of setting that up. So it would be for committee members, travel to come together for the convenings. Much of the work can be done remotely, but when we do those types of standard work, we usually do a kickoff at the beginning and a wrap-up at the end, where we bring the group together to make sure that we have that opportunity to really get everybody on the same page before they're working remotely, especially for something of this nature that would be, new for the state of Alaska. So we'd want to make sure that we have a good standard setting for that work. In addition, we have included, as I mentioned, the facilitator costs for somebody that has that national expertise to bring that and make sure that we're bringing that to the work we're doing for the state. In addition, when we're doing that type of work and we're bringing together those committee members, to honor their time and commitment, a stipend is included. Those are sort of typical costs for standards development. This would be a little bit different. So, we would be doing some things slightly differently than a sort of educational standards process, but similar type of convenings. In addition, we have included here some costs for staff to support the work. And at this time, because we haven't done this type of work in the state, a lot of that would be around supporting the standards development process and evaluating what the ongoing costs and needs would be for the department to maintain the program, how many programs we would need to be vetting and evaluating on any given year, and then monitoring and over time. So we have included a cost for that, but it would be include the evaluation of what that long-term costs would be to maintain the program. And so that we do have the costs for establishing the position and the costs that are associated with that with setting up the position. Those are the costs that we have detailed in the fiscal note if you have any questions for us.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe a little baseline. How do we envision the standards established by the board under a bill like this would differ from either the national or regional accrediting organizations? What what would we do that would enable, for instance, the one presenter who was invited to be accredited by the state rather than by those other institutions?
That's a very good question. Do you want to start?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Keel. Again, this is Sandra Meredith for the record. So just a little background, as you asked for, we currently expect our state board in our regulations expect that all of our programs go through what is called CAPE accreditation. It's a national organization, an acronym. It's the Council for the Evaluation of Educator Preparation Programs. And so the cost for that right now is shouldered by our universities. And typically, universities are the ones that use that kind of accreditation body for this purpose. And we basically say in Alaska, in order to be a state-approved program, you have to have national accreditation. And so all of the work that we're talking about, we don't do at the state level. That is handed off to the national level. But with alternative programs, they wouldn't necessarily be going through that national organization. And so right now our universities actually pay that national university for their initial evaluation, for looking at them periodically every 7 years, and then also looking at any problems that they were noticed on their reviews and monitoring their improvement on that. So that will be part of the process. Going back to the standards piece, we would probably have very similar standards, but there would be an opportunity for us to make some very specific requirements within our standards, say around educator, around the reading aspect or the culturally responsive piece, that would not necessarily be something that is included in the national standards. So I would anticipate that we'd have some slight changes to, or slight, probably mostly additions to what is expected on the national level. Did I get it?
Well,
Senator Keel.
So thank you. That's helpful. I guess the question, if we're looking at adding to what the national accrediting organizations do, why set up our own at all if we're just going to have stricter standards than what's already out there?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, again, Sandra Meredith. I think the main reason is to allow for alternate pathways, as was described before, to have not have to go through that national process, to have some sort of local where we can actually modify the standards or make the standards open enough to allow for these alternate pathways to be able to gain state approval.
Senator Keel, follow.
Thank you. And I may just need some more education on the pathway differences. But for now, I guess the next question would be, I was a little surprised looking at the fiscal note. It's lower than what we've seen for some requirements to set up state standards and monitor a one-credit high school class and keep that up to date going forward. And so I guess the question would be, what kind of work exactly would the new part-time position be doing? How much monitoring would be going on? What's that look like?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, this is Kelly Manning for the record. The position would help us to establish what that monitoring would look like over time. Because we haven't had a state standards for teacher preparation, we would need to evaluate what that would look like over time. But that, once those standards are in place, we would need to have a staff person that would actually conduct that assessment. You know, however, the, you know, when the teacher preparation program applied to process those applications to determine if they've met the standards that have been identified and then support the process for the state board approval. And then with other states that we have seen that have done similar work, they have done
processes where then there's a evaluation, you know, not an annual or, you know, every few years evaluation of that program to ensure that they're still meeting those standards. And so the staff person would help us in setting up what that structure would look like. But we just don't really know what the long-term costs would be because we haven't done that work. It would depend on how many programs we're applying to have that state approval. And so this is assuming that that person would do that evaluation and identify any additional resources that would be needed to sustain the program over time.
And if I may?
Senator Keel.
You anticipated my next question, which was how many do we anticipate at full rollout once we have some standards down? How many programs do we anticipate might be out there? I know that there's one that spoke. Are there others who might be candidates? What's that look like?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the way that I understand the language of this bill is that it would potentially open up our state approval so that it wouldn't be required necessarily to have national accreditation anymore. It could be one or the other or both, depending upon how the board wrote the regulation. And so potentially we could have the ones that are currently in using the CAPE accreditation process come back and just use our state. So they may be candidates for this. And then there's other organizations beyond ABCTE. There's like Teach for America. There may also be some other even university-rooted programs that may want to come to us and apply to be state-approved in Alaska. So we're talking probably a total. With what we have currently is 4 in-state programs, and then probably another couple from outside that may become candidates under this new approach.
Madam Chair,
Senator,
I apologize for just going on.
You're
fine. So that, I guess, leads me to the last fiscal note question, which is there a reason that we're looking to UGF for that rather than receipts, rather than charging programs? As you described other accreditations as being paid for by the institutions to the accrediting body. Why would we take a different approach here?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. Again, this is Kelly Manning for the record. There is a possibility that we could explore that option. And that is one of the things that we would want that staff person to explore. There are states that have models where there's a fee structure associated with the approval process. So that's certainly something that we could explore and consider as an option for the program to reduce the UGF costs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Any additional questions? So just to make sure I understood what was being said. So right now our teacher preparation programs that are regionally accredited are mostly through our university system. And this would open it up for additional competition that would be using general funds from the state of Alaska to support direct competition with our university. Is that somewhere around accurate? Yes, no, maybe?
Chair Tobin, for the record, this is Kelly Manning. Certainly, if we did not charge a fee structure, that would be different from universities that are paying for regional accreditation.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Any additional questions? Thank you both very much. Ms. Alcantara, any last comments before we set this bill aside?
For the record, Almarie Alcantara, staff to Senator Olson. The senator does apologize. Unfortunately, he had another meeting that he had to step out for, but he just wanted to express his gratitude for the committee hearing the bill today. And two, something that I'd like to note that I didn't earlier, and something that I see as a benefit to this bill is, you know, in creating these alternate certificate pathways, it also allows for more flexibility. Flexibility that individuals might not receive going through a traditional program. So,
you know, you can look at it in a way of if you're an individual who's already received your degree, but you're wanting to become a teacher, you know, you might not have the availability to take the time away, to quit your job, to leave your family, to go attend school. So really it provides that flexibility, which, as I mentioned, you know, traditional programs might not offer the same. So.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It is. I will be setting this bill aside, and we will open it up for public testimony at a different date. Now we will move on to our last item of business, which is Senate Bill 120, Extend Education Tax Credits. And there is a committee substitute for this bill. The Senate Education Committee heard SB 120 on April 5th. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt Work Order 33-LS0650-B as our working document for Senate Bill 120. Thank you,
and
Madam Chair.
Thank you, and I will object for a summary of changes. If folks are not familiar with Mike Mason, the Senate Committee aide, he is here to walk us through an explanation of the changes.
Good afternoon, Mike Mason. I am staff to Senator Lugie Gill-Tobin. I will try to make this as simple as I can. So this is the summary of changes from version A to version B. Section 1 would amend AS21.96.07A. That's the statute that governs the insurance tax credit. It would add the word for to the end of the sentence. This was recommended by Ledge Legal to clarify that the tax credits are allowed for contributions accepted by the entities that are identified in subsections 1 through 7. Really just a technical fix that was to the statute. The meat of this is version B would add a new subsection 7, stipulating that contributions subject to the education tax credit can be used for the operation of a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting statewide academic achievement, including for student scholarships in an interdisciplinary curriculum in the subject areas of economics, science, social science, literature, music, art, math, writing, speech, and interview skills. Section 4 would amend AS43.20.014A, that's the statute that governs the income tax education credit, to add the new subsection 13 that includes the identical language that was in the new subsection 7. And that is essentially repeated in sections 7, section 10, section 13, 16, and 19. And those are the statutes that govern the oil and gas producer education credit, the statute governing the property tax education credit, the statute governing the mining business education credits, the statute that governs the fisheries business education credits, and the fisheries resource landing tax education credits. So essentially it's that one section adding nonprofits to all of the various sections of the education tax credit bill. And that is the very quick summary of changes.
Thank you, Mr. Mason. A quick question of why did we add this section?
So in its simplest form, I might very well turn this over to Senator Keel since he was the impetus for this. But just to kind of explain, there are some entities out there that would like to take advantage of the education tax credit that currently are not explicitly authorized. The most obvious one was the example that Senator Keel brought forward, which is the Alaska Academic Decathlon, which is governed by CERC. And in research with Legislative Legal, with the Department of Revenue, it became clear that these organizations, while some of their activities might very well be authorized under the education tax credit, they were not explicitly noted. And that is what this change does, was make those kinds of entities where they can receive the contributions through the education tax credit, the entities that give the contributions can then accept that tax credit. And perhaps Senator Keel, who's got some history here, might want to add more detail than I've got.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mason. Mr. Keel, Senator Keel, any additional comments?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the inclusion in the CS. There is a significant list of programs that can be supported with education tax credits in the state, and those include through language of general application, any number of excellent programs. The Academic Decathlon program is one that is not on there. It is an extremely valuable program, and it's very difficult to pay for. It's operated statewide by a nonprofit, which has folks who are interested in helping them pay for that, but would be much more interested if this mechanism were available. So this, I think, is an excellent way to add that strong academic program to the list, along with, you know, the other many, many excellent programs here, Native cultural and heritage programs, vocational technical programs, university programs, STEM programs, et cetera.
Thank you very much, Senator Keel. Mr. Mason.
Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin through the chair. In talking to people, exactly what Senator Keel mentioned, there are corporations, there are entities out there that would like to support CERC and the Alaska Academic Decathlon and some of these other entities, but they were just wary of getting involved because they were not explicitly spelled out in the statutes. So this change in the CS version B would clarify that and make it where these entities could accept donations and the donators would be able to take advantage of the tax credit.
Well, thank you very much. Are there any additional questions? Seeing none, I move my objection. Are there any additional objections? Seeing none, Work Order 33-LS0650-B is adopted as our working document. Version B of Senate Bill 120 is now before the committee. We also have available questions, Colleen Glover from the Director of Tax Division, the Department of Revenue. However, it is my intent to move Senate Bill 120 out of committee today. Are there any additional questions or final comments? Seeing none, Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to report Senate Bill 120, Work Order 33-LS0650-B from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Without objection, Senate Bill 120, Work Order 33-LS0650-B, as in Baranoff, is reported from the Senate Education Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Please stay after the committee and we will sign the report at that time. Just to give the public notice, we will not be meeting this Friday, May 5th. We anticipate the next meeting will be on Monday, May 8th. However, we do not have any additional items on our calendar, and so we may not have a meeting on Monday, May 8th as well. But that will be determined hopefully by tomorrow. As there's no other business before the committee today, I'm going to adjourn today's meeting at 4:25 p.m.